That was Beyonce with Halo, and you are on Mornings on the Move with me, Leah G, right here on Radio Life and Style. And one short day after Human Rights Day, which we celebrated yesterday, I'm in studio with an environmental justice lawyer, Kirsten Ewens. Get it right, don't say Ewens, she might be offended, but we won't stumble. Kirsten, good morning to you, and thank you so much for joining me in studio today.
Oh, thank you, Leah. Lovely to be here.
So I wanted to open up the conversation, and perhaps anybody who is tuning in right now might wonder, you know, how does an environmental justice lawyer have anything to do with human rights? And also, what's the deal with celebrating Human Rights Day? And I'm of the opinion that they're not two separate things. And I know that the work that you do and some of the cases that you are involved in are directly tackling human rights. One such, the right to a clean, safe environment, adequate safety, adequate drinking water, and so much more. Can you help me unpack this topic and help people understand why, even after so many years of human rights becoming a celebrated day, we're still tackling some of the same issues?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's a good question, because I actually started out as an environmental lawyer, mm-hmm. Focusing on environmental law mainly. And I started as an animal rights activist.
Okay.
Many years ago, when I was 9 years old or 6 years old or something. Long ago.
Protesting the circus.
Yes, exactly. But the more I got involved in working in environmental law, the more I realized that human rights and environmental rights are inextricably linked. You can't separate them, because you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
And it became very obvious in the work that I was doing defending the Shishliwi Umfolozi Game Reserve from an open cast coal mine.
Yeah.
I got involved with that in the early 2013, around about then.
And that's still ongoing, right?
It is ongoing, but the first area I started in was in the southern area, which hadn't begun, and I worked with a community there. And the more I worked with the community, I realized how open cast coal mining affects human rights issues as well as environmental issues. So the impact on the water affects the people drinking the water. Mm. The impact on the air affects the people breathing the air. The impact on the soil impacts the people that are growing their vegetables and trying to live off the land.
Yeah.
And so the work that we do now at All Rise is all to do with environmental justice, which is the overlap between human rights and environmental rights. And Section 24 of our Constitution, everyone has a right to an environment that's not harmful to their health or well-being.
Mm.
And that's something that we work with every single day.
And that is something that is so often overlooked and so easily overlooked, especially living in urban areas where we have access to all of that. We don't have to contend with such basic human rights, but there is still such a major number of the population's people who just don't have that. And again, we are so far into this fight, but still we find ourselves tackling the basics. Why do you think that is? Do you think there's just not enough funding going to those type of things, or do you think that it's for a lack of understanding or a lack of willingness to understand from people?
A lot of what we're dealing with has to do with political will.
Mm.
It's still seen that the fossil fuel industry is a way to make money, and the people that are being affected by the decisions that are being made are not being considered adequately, or if at all. So we often say that it's our clients who are actually invisible. They don't exist, because the decision makers made by the government that wants the industry to be promoted, and the industry itself is making the money. So the people that are in the way are simply invisible, and the environment as well. You know, they do assessments that are not properly done a lot of the time.
Little shortcuts and tinkering to have the correct or desired results show.
Yeah, I mean, you can't possibly say, I mean, anyone who's driven past the Somkele coal mine on the border of the Shishliwi Umfolozi Game Reserve, if you go in or out the southern gate, you can't possibly tell me that that doesn't have an impact on the environment. It's simply not possible. And the argument is that it doesn't. It's not, you know, compared to the jobs that it provides, the environment is, you know, not really that badly affected, according to the decision makers and the people involved.
And that is visible, but like you say, and that hits differently when you consider that somebody is seen as invisible. You know, that really, that's not okay, and it doesn't take somebody else to tell you that. But not only are these people not having access to basic human needs, but they're also displaced from their homes and cultural homes that have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. And what support are these people getting, if any at all?
Yeah, unfortunately, it happens all over the country. Mm. It probably, you know, it happens all over the world. People are displaced to make way for mining. And in some instances in South Africa, people were made displaced to make way for game farms and protected areas. Mm. But when it comes to the work that we do, yes, people are told to relocate. And it's very difficult, especially for Zulu people. Mm. The land is everything. They live off the land. The land is passed down from generation to generation.
Yeah.
And the psychological impact, let alone the economic impact of having to move, is huge.
And yet you have people who may even stay just because against their health that's actually being affected, because they are so proud and attached to their land.
Most of them do stay. They get relocated off the immediate land that they have to move from. So, and they end up living 500 meters from blasting and open cast coal mine, which is very, very, very detrimental to their health, both their physical health and their mental well-being.
Yeah, and they're raising kids in these circumstances as well.
They're raising kids, and you know, oftentimes they don't realize how reliant they are on their land until the land is gone. So their crops don't grow. They now can't access water. Mm. Either the water table has dropped as a result of dewatering, or the access to the water is fenced off and they have to make long, long journeys now to access water. Or the water is polluted. A lot of the water that is now run off from the roof that they would collect in the JoJo tank normally is polluted with coal dust and they can't drink it. So suddenly people that were living, they were subsistence farmers, living off the land, living off water that they could access freely. They are now paying for water, paying for food, paying for meat, because their goats can't live off the grass that's covered in coal dust either.
Which drastically, drastically affects their living standard as well, because resources are now incredibly, incredibly sparse. Kristen, what would you say, and could you put a number to the radius of impact from one such coal mine or one such mine?
Oh my goodness, it's much, much, much bigger than 500 meters. We talk about it all the time. And, you know, I've been 15 kilometers away when a blast takes place. And the physical impact on my lungs, not just the sound, but the sort of gust of air that gets sucked from your lungs. I'm not entirely sure how it happens physically, but 15 kilometers away, I felt it. So I don't know how anyone living within that radius survives.
So and they're dealing with numerous blasts. How many, up to how many a day?
Well, it's not usually more than one a day, but it depends on what's happening.
Okay.
So, but often once a week. And often the schools, the kids that are in the schools nearby have to, when the siren goes off, they run out of the classrooms because they're afraid that the building will fall down when the blasting takes place. But I mean, dust, how do you put a radius on dust pollution or water? I mean, you know, it's the radius is at least between 5 and 10 kilometers. For example, the national buffer zone around a national park is 5 kilometers for mining.
Okay.
And yet people must live within 500 meters of mining.
That is absolutely crazy. Like you say, the people are considered invisible, and it sounds like so is the effect. I mean, and that's convenient. It's convenient to have it invisible.
Very convenient, unless you're up against us, and then we make it very inconvenient.
and your company is All Rise. I understand that you were also an applicant in a very contentious issue that we are fighting at the moment, and that is the Shell seismic blasting. Can you put us in the loop with regards to what's happening in that space?
Yes. So All Rise is a non-profit law clinic registered in terms of the Law Legal Practice Council in South Africa.
Okay.
So we can only do pro bono work, and we do it under specific guidelines. In the Shell case, we weren't the lawyers acting in that case, we were applicants. So we joined the community organizations and the communities as applicants.
Okay.
And we that was the interdict from continuing with its seismic survey that had started in December last year. That interdict we won.
Okay.
And now it has to go to court to review the decision that was made to allow them to do the seismic surveys in the first place.
Okay.
So there's a whole lot of issues that we have with them having been granted that decision. One of them that they didn't do an environmental impact assessment. So the interdict was granted, but it's temporary. Mm. It was urgent to stop them, and it's pending the outcome of the review of that application.
And obviously, this is all profit linked, so time cannot necessarily be defined. But would you be able to, I don't know, gauge at all how long before these things actually start happening, if at all?
I'm not entirely sure the dates on the Shell case, being an applicant and not the attorney on that, so I'm not 100% sure. But for example, just, you know, one of our matters that we instituted against the coal mine, we instituted in 2019. It was eventually heard last year.
Wow.
In November. Okay. And we're still waiting for judgment.
So these things can take time. And sometimes what happens with time is people forget. So we want to remind people to not feel like they are far removed from these environmental issues and these human rights issues, because it might not be knocking on your door, but it's very much still a part of the community that makes up your living circumstances.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody doesn't see it every day. I feel so completely overwhelmed with the human rights crises that are going on in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
You'd have to really be an ostrich to not see it.
I like that analogy. Keeping it clean for radio. Chris, I think that we could sit and chat all day, and there are so many questions with regards to human rights and so many avenues that this could lead off of, but I would love to touch base with you on the Shell case when you do have any more information. And I just want to thank you again for maybe opening somebody's eyes for the first time today as to the issues that some people are facing every single day. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thanks, Leah.
Have yourself a great day. We're headed for a short ad break and then to the 10:30 news update with Nokwanda. So